Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
How do you eat seasonally here in the Midwest? I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. This is the first in our new monthly series exploring how to plan ahead and eat with the seasons, whether it's from your own plot in the community garden, pots of herbs on your windowsill, or veggies that you get from a farmer's market, even your favorite grocery store. In a few minutes, we'll hear from cook, historian, and our guide for this series, Jordan Wimby, a.k.a. Melanin Martha. And we start with Reset producer Linnea Dominic, foodie and the mastermind behind this series. Linnea, where did this idea come from?
Back in the beginning of the pandemic, deep in lockdown, I got really into cooking magazines as a way to self-soothe. Mm-hmm. And I came across the Martha Stewart Living magazine.
Of course.
Yeah, as you do. And there's a feature in these magazines that I really loved. It's called Martha's Month. Gentle reminders, helpful tips, and important date. It's at the beginning of each of the magazines. It's okay. A calendar. And in it, you'll find all of the activities you would expect to find from Martha Stewart. There's horseback riding. Yes. There's recipes. There's cleaning tips, deep cleaning projects. There's recipes. There's gardening. And I'll read you a couple of the examples from 2017 March edition.
Okay.
The 16th of March, she was baking Irish soda bread ahead of St. Patrick's Day. She was making birthday cakes at the beginning of the month for her grandchildren.
Wow.
She was rotating her houseplants to ensure even sun distribution. I mean, brilliant.
So organized?
So organized.
Wow.
She also has different days she's starting different seeds. And I was really blown away by this level of organization and sort of weaving together all of the elements of homemaking. And it really resonated for me, particularly because when I moved here 15 years ago, one of the best pieces of advice that I got was to not fight the seasons and really lean in, especially with winter. But it gets kind of hard and overwhelming. You know, life gets busy.
Yes, it sure does.
And so I was like, wow, to really plan ahead all of these different pieces is genius. And so I wanted to figure out how we could lean into seasonality here on the show in our conversations about food, especially in the midst of climate change.
Fabulous idea.
Yeah. And to really see, like, how are the stories and how can we tap into the stories of ancestral knowledge about tending the land in this area, the way food can be a way to resist and the way it has served as cultural survival.
So Jordan, I wonder your reaction when Linnea gave you the phone call and said, hey, I've got this idea.
Oh my God. We talked for a hot minute. I was like, I am so ready. I have so many ideas and so many things to share. I was very excited because for me, homemaking is about not only tending to your house and cleaning and cooking, but also, you know, nourishment. And eating seasonally really allows you to have that nourishment in a different way than just going to the grocery store and buying tomatoes in the middle of December.
Right. Well, as I mentioned, these will be monthly conversations as part of our weekly food segment that we have here on the show. So tell us what we can expect from the series, Linnea.
We can expect recipes, we can expect stories, we can expect cooking tips and gardening tips.
I cannot wait. That's Reset producer Linnea Dominic. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So Jordan, tell me, how did you take on the name Melanin Martha? I gotta know.
So there's a couple of different reasons why I chose to call my brand the Melanin Martha. The first was because of Martha Stewart. I was really astonished and mesmerized by the fame and attention that we gave to Martha Stewart for doing all of these, you know, house activities, the cooking, the cleaning, the gardening, the organizing, and really thought to myself, this is the work that marginalized people and Black women have been doing for decades.
Yeah.
Without recognition, without the platform to share their tips, their tricks, their rituals. So I really kind of wanted to be the advocate for that space and drive attention towards those stories.
Yeah, and you've been on this program several times in your role as a cultural historian and a cook. But you have a farming background?
I do.
What?
I also have a farming background. I have worked in a winery overseas that had a farm.
Of course you did.
Also, I've worked with my friend who started her own homestead in SoCal in Southern California when I lived out there. Mm-hmm. I have my own garden. I've been involved in like community gardens throughout Chicago. So I really, for me, it's very important to preserve also the culture of growing your own food when you don't have access.
Talk more about that. What are people gaining when they eat with the seasons?
Well, one thing is that you're gaining control. You are also learning how to be in this symbiotic relationship with the earth around you, where you are and what naturally grows. And where we are from is so important to also the foods that feed us, depending on where you're geographically located.
Yeah.
And it teaches you a little bit more about your body, about yourself, about your community. And also how to support those farmers in your community as well. And so there's a lot of rewarding reasons why I think people should start growing their food and also eating seasonally.
Yeah, I'm thinking about affordability too.
Absolutely.
That's got to be in there. And the folks who are listening to us right now who maybe don't intend to garden, but they do want to eat seasonally, right? And they are intrigued. What do you think is the value here in having that deeper understanding of how your food is grown?
Right. It's the culture behind it. When you start eating seasonally, you really start to learn that you don't want to necessarily advocate for mega markets or the giant grocers. You really want to start supporting the local farmers who are giving you the produce that naturally you would be enjoying without, you know, the big grocery stores and things of that nature.
Right.
So you're establishing those relationships. And I think it's important to educate ourselves on what can we eat right now that is not pumped with GMOs? We're eating things that are not supposed to be on our plates in certain months, you know? So I think
like what?
I mentioned tomatoes earlier. You know, tomatoes are a summer crop. They do great in the heat. You know, that's something you see in the summer. You see winter squashes in the winter, in the fall. Looking at beans and carrots and radishes in springtime. So these are things that you start to think about. And, you know, when you see certain ingredients that you're like, how did this grow in this cold weather? This is not a cold resistant crop. This is a heat, this is a crop that grows great in the heat. So,
Well, here's the thing. We have to acknowledge the fact that we just had the warmest February on record.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So to your point, I mean, this is impacting the planning process.
Absolutely.
Right?
And
what feels possible to grow and eat right now.
You know, that's a great question. I've been having a really hard time with that, too. The fluctuation is something that gardeners all over and farmers all over cannot predict. It's caught us totally by surprise. I mean, I think one day we were at 60 degrees and then it dropped all the way to 20. That's something that is a really big deal for a gardener or a farmer. Those temperatures are drastic and they don't help the health of a plant. But one thing that I'm learning to do is lean into the crops that do really, really well within any weather situation. Those that can kind of, you know, be resilient and bounce back no matter if it's kind of cold, if you have a light frost, or if it's, you know, a little bit more heat in that time.
Can you give us a few examples?
Like radishes. You know, radishes do an absolutely amazing job in almost all temperatures. Carrots also do a great job. Beans do a great job. I mean, we're not in the super hot 90s or the 80s yet.
Yeah.
So we can still kind of get away with some of these crops.
Mm-hmm. Once you know what to eat, Jordan, then you start thinking about seeds. Mm-hmm. Now, I've been seeing lots of seed swap events sprouting up.
Yes.
The pun was intended there. And there's something really beautiful, I think, about these events, right? Because people are really coming together and they're sharing seeds that are eventually going to become food.
Exactly.
For you, it's deeper than that. Talk about how it connects to history.
Yeah, so the importance of seed swapping and saving seeds for me and many, many African Americans around the nation, it means preserving culture. It means holding on to crops that are linked to your lineage, that really are linked to your ancestry, and using them as a vehicle to hold on to that a little bit deeper.
Yeah. For someone new to starting seeds, what do you think they should keep in mind? And what materials do they need?
So there's a lot of different ways that you can start seeds. Some people decide to start seeds in smaller containers, and most of the time you're going to want to start them indoors. There are some seeds that you can sow directly into the ground. growing lights are great. They simulate the sunshine and they can be used indoors. That really helps, you know, the health of a young seedling. I do hydroponics. So I have a little hydroponic system on my countertop and I start my seeds in that.
Amazing. What seeds are you starting?
Right now, I'm not starting anything that has to be transplanted. So that means when you start a seed, there are some crops that can be grown inside, and then when they reach like young adult, let's just say that, then you can take them outside, harden them off. So you leave them outside. You don't put them in the ground yet. And you just get them accustomed to the outdoors. Okay. You're like, here's your new home. This is wonderful. And then you can then plant them into the ground when their roots are ready to then go into the soil. So all of my plants that I'm doing can just be sown directly into the ground. Carrots, radishes, and
okay.
things like that.
Very smart. You mentioned sunlight there, because we do have to start thinking about how much sunlight our garden will get and what seeds we should plant together.
Right. Companion gardening.
Yeah. And the thing is, this can get a little overwhelming, Jordan. So how do you recommend people start thinking about the organization part of things?
So there's a few ways. So there's a lot of amazing apps. I use an app that helps me plan out strategically based off of, I get to put in the dimensions of my garden bed or my plot, and it helps me to kind of decide which plants grow well together. So it lays it all out. It'll say basil goes great next to tomatoes, but you don't want to plant it next to X, Y, and Z.
Okay.
So that helps, that really helps a gardener who is one, not familiar with companion planting, kind of, you know, get an idea, and it kind of just gives you the blueprint and it lays it out for you.
Mm-hmm.
Also talks about spacing. How much space do your plants need to grow? How far apart do you need to plant the seeds? How much sunlight do certain things need to grow? So it's really interesting, because even last year I grew some sunflowers. And sunflowers grow really, really tall, right?
Yes, and beautiful.
And they're gorgeous, but they block sun for the things next door to it. So keeping things like that in mind is really what's going to help you have a successful garden.
Listen, I can tell just from listening to you that you find such joy in this process.
That. I do.
How do you keep that sense of happiness and joy rather than this just being another thing to do, another task?
I don't have any children, you know, and all the people listening who have children, I'm sure you can relate to this. Watching something that you're taking care of grow is so rewarding and it's so exciting. And you want to protect your crops, you know, you want to protect your crops. You want to make sure that they're doing well. You want to see the return of investment from your time. And so it's really, you don't lose the joy, because it's a process and you're growing with this plant, and you're really having to practice patience and nurturing, and it's really fun.
And you're preserving a lot of the food that you grow.
Yes,
right?
I do preserve a lot of the food.
Do you have
I
any
grow.
Canned or pickled veggies left?
I do have some pickled veggies left. Nice. I love pickled veg. You know, I love my pickled okra, pickled green beans, all of those things. I do a lot of quick pickling in the summertime, but I also will harvest and can tomatoes for the summer so that I can use those things in the colder months.
We'll leave it there. That's Jordan Wimby, a.k.a. Melanin Martha. We look forward to catching up with you in April.
I'm so excited. We'll have lots of fun things to share.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Linnea Dominic, edited by Meha Ahmed and Dan Tucker, and mixed by Brenda Ruiz. Come back to the pod every Friday morning for more food coverage, and Friday afternoons for our weekly news recap, where we share what you need to know about the biggest stories in Chicago and Illinois. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thank you for listening.
Have you ever wondered why anyone drinks Malort? Or if there are actually lobsters in the Chicago River? Then listen to the Curious City podcast, where we answer all your questions about Chicago and the region. WBEZ's Curious City is part of the NPR network and available wherever you find your podcasts.